We're at your KGO Radio News.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Pete Wilson Program on KGO. Thank you for some very thoughtful emails and calls in that first hour. I kind of hesitated to talk about the Virginia situation because there's no answer out there. There's nothing we can provide ourselves that's going to make us feel any better. The usual subjects come up about the reasons why these things happen. It may all boil down in the end to just one crazy guy who happened to get his hands on weapons. We will see where it goes. But again, thanks. Some excellent emails and calls in that first hour, as you'd expect if you listen to this radio station very often. Total change of subject this hour. You've heard me quote from this magazine on a couple of occasions. I've become quite enamored in the last several years with Reason Magazine, that is generally advertised as the thoughtful libertarian magazine. I think you could argue about that with some of the writers for the magazine, but it really is one of those publications that makes you think one way or the other, whether you disagree with the magazine's interpretation of things or not. And the editor of that magazine is a fellow named Brian Doherty. He's in our studios because he has written a tome, not just a book. This is tome. It is called Radicals for Capitalism, a freewheeling history of the modern American libertarian movement. Brian, how are you?
I'm very good. Thrilled to be here. I like people to think of my 700-page book as a lifetime companion of sorts.
Yes, well, it is. Well, I told you before, I'm 151 pages. Pardon me. Yeah, 151 pages into the book. It's going to take longer. It's already getting very interesting because the movement. I don't even know how to describe it. You describe what it is before we describe. In fact, try to define it. What is this? Is this a movement of some kind, or just a way of thinking?
It's a way of thinking, and it also is a movement. It's currently people pushing libertarian ideas in venues, including the Libertarian Party, America's longest-lasting and most successful, as far as that goes,
third party,
intellectual think tanks like the Cato Institute,
right.
Magazines like Reason, where I work.
And even Republican and Democrat, the corners of the Republican and Democratic Party.
Absolutely. You have figures like Republican Congressman Ron Paul, who actually was a Libertarian Party candidate in 1988. Jeff Flake from Arizona, pretty libertarian. You have legal action groups like the Institute for Justice. You have student education groups like the Institute for Humane Studies. There really is groups pushing libertarian ideas everywhere in American culture.
Is it or is it not true? Am I wrong when I say that the name libertarian may have been one of the biggest mistakes the movement ever made, because it utterly confuses people? They hear that name and they're trying to figure out, what does that mean? Does that mean people who, you know, are libertines? Does it mean? I mean, again, it's a difficult word.
Yeah, the reason why that term had to develop was, in the 19th century, the word liberal actually used to mean pretty much what libertarian means today,
a
movement for increasing individual liberty. In the progressive era, in the FDR era, the word liberal came to mean government control, allegedly for positive ends to help people out. So people who still believed in the ideals that really were behind the Declaration of Independence, this idea that government should strictly be limited to protecting people's rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That word pursuit is very important because it doesn't mean some kind of guarantee of happiness, but just a pursuit. So we needed a new word, and hopefully people will recognize that the word liberty is there at the root of it. But yeah, it can get confusing. I certainly have seen in the last 20 years that more people at least are understanding what the term means. Doesn't mean they agree, but they're at least starting to understand what it means.
Certainly. All right, define it. I mean, and now that's just impossible. But define it as best you can. I think we know how we would define, depending on what our own viewpoint is, the Republican or the Democratic philosophy. How do you define it?
Yeah, it's a belief that human beings have inherent rights to their own life and to their own property, and that government's only purpose, if it has any at all, and there's some people I talk about in my book who actually envision a world with no government at all, they're called the anarcho-capitalists, that all government should do is help protect your life and help protect your property. It's actually it's an easier idea to grasp, I think, than standard modern conservatism or liberalism, which actually is sort of a confused grab bag of ideas. Libertarian ideas follow straight, should there be a law? Well, is it preventing someone from harming someone else or harming someone else's property? If not, the government should step out of it, right. And it all follows from there.
Now, typical issues would be that you would be against laws preventing prostitution or against laws preventing drug use or against laws governing guns, for instance, which we just talked about for an hour. On this program. On the other hand, you would be against government getting involved in things that aren't for the good of the country. For instance, the war in Iraq. It's a variety of things and not necessarily predictable. People who think they know where a libertarian will go, it gets a little dicier than that.
I'm aware that that's factually true, but I wonder why that is the case.
Yeah.
I think it's because people are so used to thinking in sort of the yay team, I'm a Republican, I believe what Republicans believe, or yay team, I'm a Democrat, I believe what Democrats believe. They have a hard time grasping the internal consistency of libertarianism because it's not about, oh, is this going to be good for the Bush administration? Is this going to be good to help the Democrats grab the White House in 2008? It really is just about hewing to human freedom. That's the lodestar of the libertarian.
And one more before we get into the essence of this book, all that you've already heard Brian talk about is in this book. There is a tendency, I think, or there has been in the last 15 to 20 years, of people to think about libertarians as simply, conservatives who use more complicated sentences.
Or you also will hear conservatives who use drugs.
Yes,
and there's a reason behind that joke, because conservatism, to its credit, has at least rhetorically been a philosophy at least believing in free markets. They've been pretty much for freedom in the economic realm. Libertarians take that idea and they take the freedom idea and apply it everywhere. So indeed, there is a lot that sounds conservative in libertarianism. To the extent you associate conservatism with free markets. But, of course, there's also a lot that doesn't sound conservative at all, like the things you mentioned. No laws about prostitution, no laws about drugs. Libertarians tend to be much more non-interventionist than most conservatives.
My libertarian bent it tends towards the issues to which we attach what I define as nannyism. And I love the first part of Reason magazine, which you edit. The early parts, the first few pages, are usually devoted to kind of a laundry list of the stupidity of government around the country and the kinds of things that they will attempt to pass as law.
Absolutely. I mean, the government believes or seems to believe that none of us, have the sense God gave a goat. None of us have any ability or right to manage our own lives. And I would like to believe my fellow Americans would reject that idea and reject it violently and believe that what America is all about is people who are free to choose and free to run their own lives.
All right. Now, what I'm going to do is we're going to try to set up the direction of the history of this book, because that's really what this book is about. This is a history book. A freewheeling history book, albeit, but a history book nonetheless. And then we'll open up the phones and get you to ask questions of Brian Doherty. 8080810. You can email us at KGO.com. Radicals for Capitalism, available on the KGO book line. This is KGO. KGO 318, the Pete Wilson program on KGO. So how do you begin at the beginning of the Libertarian Party? Where do you go? Well, you go to some place most Americans are not the slightest familiar with, and Brian Doherty is here to help us. His book is called Radicals for Capitalism. We'll tell you how to get it and any appearances and so on as we go along here. A freewheeling history of the modern American libertarian movement. Where did this begin? Was it just Ayn Rand or something different?
Ayn Rand was around at the beginning. She was one of the founding mothers. Actually, chapter 3 of my book, it's interesting. This is a very feminist story,
yes,
the libertarian story, but you wouldn't know it to talk to most modern feminist scholars because most of them are socialists. Three of the founding figures of the movement were women, and they all came out with fabulous books in 1943, which I do mark as the beginning of a distinctly modern American libertarian movement. Of course, the ideas of freedom go back to the American founding and earlier, and I survey all that in chapters 1 and 2. But her, Rose Wilder Lane, who was the daughter of Laura Ingalls Wilder, who wrote those wonderful Little House on the Prairie books so many of us loved as kids, and Isabel Patterson. Patterson and Lane were both classic American frontiers women, grew up on the frontier, had the hardy frontier virtues. They both married young. Both of them managed to misplace their husbands a couple of years into the marriage, never saw them again, lived independent lives. Rand was an escapee of sorts from Soviet Russia, wrote fabulous novels that condemned not only the Soviet system in its you know, in its concrete realities, but also the bad ideas behind the Soviet Union, collectivism, the notion that your life didn't belong to you. Rand Paterson and Lane all set forth sort of the set of ideas, the set of principles, and the set and the tone that's dominated libertarianism ever since. And the other sort of stream that flowed into this is the economists. They represent sort of the literary side.
Yes.
The great economists, the two major ones were from Austria, Ludwig von Mises and F.A. Hayek. Ludwig von Mises proved that complete socialism would ultimately prove so economically inefficient that it could never work and could never be a real competitor to free market capitalism. Hayek proved in his best-selling book, The Road to Serfdom, made a big splash in 1944, that what American liberals and British liberals saw as benign economic controls had a tendency to inevitably lead to complete political tyranny. And that was a real bombshell, especially in the war years, because we all believe that, central planning, we needed it to fight the war, and we're going to need it to win the peace. And these ideas were very, very minority ideas in the 40s and 50s. You were Roswald Orlane was investigated by the FBI, actually, for daring to write in a postcard that Social Security was a bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, again, there is a certain a loving sort of flaky nature to this, that it is just radical enough. Now, of course, very much the title, that people don't know exactly how to react to it.
Yeah, it shocked them in the 40s and 50s. They were considered evil reactionaries, enemies of progress. The first libertarian educational institution founded in 1946, called the Foundation for Economic Education, this is the pre-McCarthy era, 1950, was investigated by a congressional committee, the same way that left-wingers were later on, called in, subpoenaed, ordered to name names about what groups they were supporting that were pushing these sinister ideas of no draft and, no government economic controls and being against price controls. These ideas were considered seditious.
And yet, the libertarian that I knew best, and some people insist that he was not a libertarian, was the great economist Milton Friedman. I know you're very fond of Friedman, and your Reason magazine certainly was very fond of him as well. One of the nicest people you could possibly ever want to meet, the least radical seeming person, and yet a lot of people thought what Friedman wrote, from both the right and the left, thought what Friedman wrote about was radical.
So did Friedman himself. Yeah. People who deny Friedman was a libertarian are wrong, and I have it from the great doctor's mouth himself. Mm-hmm. He's one of the lead characters in my book. He's the only one who I had the good fortune of actually getting to interview because he was the longest lived of them all. He considered himself a radical. He understood, especially in the 20th century American context, that to actually advocate complete human liberty had become a radical and despised notion. By having those qualities you recognize, the sort of the kindness, the reasonableness, he succeeded in victories for libertarian ideas in a way that no other person has. I mean, the fact that we have a volunteer army now, you can lay at Milton Friedman's feet. The fact that the inflation rate has been below double digits pretty solidly for the last 25 years, you can pretty much lay at Milton Friedman's feet. Fabulously important man, 100% libertarian.
Again, endlessly interesting, but to see him, to talk to him, that you'd see none of that. And then he'd sit down and write what he wrote. Well, we're going to continue our conversation with Brian Doherty. I want you to give us a call now at 808-0810. You can email us at kj.com if you have any questions about this process, about what all of this is. Very clearly, you are seeing on the edges of writing from the conservative side and from the liberal side, Republicans, Democrats, if you choose to call them that, because that's the way they divide themselves, this fascination with this notion. Could a Democrat be a libertarian? You know, you're seeing this sort of article. There is dissatisfaction with these two parties. It's very clear to me.
I absolutely agree. And some recent polling coming out of the Cato Institute, or rather analysis of polling, has indicated pretty strongly that about 13% of the American population you could roughly define as libertarian. It doesn't mean that they're as radical as the people in my book, but they roughly believe that the government should stay out of their pocketbooks, should stay out of their bedrooms, you know, the basic socially liberal, rather, and fiscally conservative mix. And it's become enough of a swing vote that I think both the Republicans, who I think are losing libertarian allegiance in the Bush administration, and the Democrats are recognizing that they might need to do something to attract these people. And I think in the aftermath of Bush, we're going to see a realignment, because it used to be assumed that if you were libertarian-leaning and you didn't go the third-party route, that you were probably going to vote Republican, because the Republicans did at least talk the free market line.
But now we just had a guy, you know, pass the biggest budgets in history who was supposedly conservative.
Yes. From our governor in California to our president in Washington, you are seeing Republicans violating libertarian principles. Pretty much the only libertarian thing about Bush has been tax cutting. And then you have to wonder, if you're cutting taxes and not cutting spending, that's not really so much libertarian as just pushing off a burden onto later generations.
And yet the other party has historically and continues to indicate that it, you know, we're the government and we're here to help. They act like government is the only answer to things, and they don't seem to be changing that direction.
I certainly don't hold out a lot of hope for a libertarian streak in the Democratic
Party. Don't you want a Department of Peace and Justice?
Who said that?
Kucinich is presenting a Department of Peace and Justice. Okay, whatever you think. Why are you not simply anarchists?
A lot of libertarians are, actually. That's another one of the interesting threads.
Dress in black clothes and run down the middle of the street at night to break.
No, you see, that's the problem. The lefty commie anarchists really have soiled the fine name of anarchism. That's why the libertarian brand of anarchism tends to be called anarcho-capitalism. You see, those anarchists you're talking about not only don't believe in government, they also don't believe in property.
Or reading a book.
The libertarian anarchist says, in a world without a state, private property becomes all the more important to make decisions about how to allocate resources, so everyone can have their own life, their own realm in which to choose.
Right.
Private property becomes vital, and I know that this all, to hear it out of the blue, sounds crazy, and I do recommend you read the book to understand it better, but certain libertarian thinkers have argued that every human need, including the needs for adjudication that we get from courts, the need for protection that we get from police, could all be supplied in a free market. And that sounds completely nutty. One thing I say to you is, think of arbitration. Think of security guards. Mm-hmm. The principle that we can hire these services, it does exist. It's possible.
Well, the book is available on the KGO Book Line at local bookstores everywhere. It's reasonable looking at this, folks, because you are beginning to see a kind of groundswell for... We've seen it periodically, and then it kind of dissolves. It's happening once again. Radicals for Capitalism, A Freewheeling History of the Modern American Libertarian Movement. Brian Doherty, the guest, 808-0810. You can email us at KGO.com. All right, Greg, and back on the Pete Wilson program on KGO, Brian Doherty, the senior editor at Reason Magazine, is with us. Radicals for Capitalism, it is from Public Affairs Publications, and you can find it at local bookstores and on the KGO book line as well. Let's go to a phone call. Jeff's been waiting quite a while in Burlingame. Jeff, you're on with our guest.
Yeah, a question. I had heard a few years ago that there was an effort by libertarians to have a bunch of them move to a small population state, like maybe Vermont or Idaho, I don't know, where they could then become the largest political party and elect a couple of U.S. senators, member of a House, governor, that sort of thing. Is that idea still alive, and if so, what state?
That idea is still alive. The state they picked was New Hampshire. It's called the Free State Project. I write about it in my book, and I wrote a big article about it in Reason. They figure that they need 20,000 libertarians in the state to become a super politically influential force. So far, they've got about, I think, 6,000 of that 20,000 committed to moving, and about 1,000 who actually did. So it's moving along, but not too fast.
It's interesting, I mean, that you picked New Hampshire, because that state, the Democrats don't sound like Democrats, the Republicans don't sound like Republicans. It is clearly a state filled with people interested in stirring things up.
Absolutely. It does have a very libertarian political culture, live free or die, right on the license plate.
Right.
But, they haven't managed to get the 20,000 to move yet, but keep your eye on it. Free State Project. Move yourself if it sounds interesting.
What is it, you think, that bothers Democrats specifically about the libertarian movement? They seem to be more bothered by it than Republicans. So it depends on the time, I realize. I mean, it's historically, we go through these cycles. But what is it that bothers Democrats about this?
Democrats seem to have a serious problem with free markets. They seem to believe that every businessman is, you know, out to, you know, barbecue a puppy, if you don't keep a close eye out on them. Mm-hmm. They mistrust the profit motive. I don't think they understand the way free markets do work to create wealth on a historic level, how they do work to spread wealth. They get upset if everyone isn't getting as rich as everyone else instantly, and they don't look comparatively, why is it a problem if the rich are getting richer when everyone's getting richer, which pretty much has been the overall trend in mm-hmm. America in the 20th century. And they also have a big streak of the nanny in them. They seem to believe that people don't have the ability or the understanding to run their own lives, to make their own choices. They think if they figured out that something is good for you, you should be forced to follow that, whether it comes mm-hmm. to smoking or eating or helmets or whatever.
Let's hear from Sean. He's been waiting in San Jose. Sean, you're on with Brian Daugherty.
Hey, what's up? How you doing, Pete and Brian?
Good.
Hey, check it out. What would be the libertarian's view of, like, the Food and Drug Administration? Because as we've seen lately, you know, drugs that have come through, like Vioxx or whatever, all of a sudden they're being recalled because they have some serious side effects. Now, if we didn't have that in place, I mean, I know it's easy to say that the capitalists would take care of themselves, but I don't think they would. Is that what you said? Would we have to, like, take drugs to figure out what we're going to take?
Well, actually, you raise a couple of different issues there, Sean. What's your response, Brian?
Sure. The libertarian economic argument about the FDA is that they like to point out how the FDA, by delaying the introduction of many valuable and life-saving drugs, actually costs lots and lots of lives. Because say if you have some drug that's going to prevent X number of heart attacks, and it ends up getting on the market 4 years later because of the complicated FDA process, you've essentially killed that many heart patients. So there's a lot of University of Chicago economists who have done analyses along those lines. And yeah, libertarians do tend to believe that it is not in the interest of any business in a world where they can be held to account through the tort system to be killing their customers, and that the human need to have a certification process for drugs, just like the Underwriter Laboratory private thing that certifies electronics, that if the government had not taken it upon itself to do that, that a private sector alternative mm-hmm. would probably arise.
One of the most interesting aspects of this is the drug issue. I think you'd agree with that simply because of the way we've debated it, the direction we've taken this debate publicly in this country, and by the way, with absolute and complete and utter lack of success. In fact, quite the opposite. I think we've done ourselves harm. It hasn't been just a question of success. But there's always that difficulty. How far do you carry this? And I talk about this on this program quite often because we are obviously in the medical marijuana capital of the world. It just seems to me that decriminalizing one drug one at a time so that we can see what the effects would be makes an enormous amount of sense. But how absolutist can you be about that from a libertarian standpoint? I've seen the physical effects of methamphetamine addiction.
Sure.
What do you do?
And you'll note you've seen that even in a world where methamphetamine is illegal.
Right.
Libertarians pretty much go all the way with the drug thing. They say that you should be able to buy, possess, and eat any substance you want, and that what drug laws do is magnify a problem that might just be your problem if you don't know how to handle a drug or get involved in a drug of abuse like methamphetamine messes up your life. Drug laws actually create social repercussions that create horrible situations for everyone, that create, you know, ghettos where, you know, the only way, riven by violence, drug wars where people don't have any courts to settle their problems. So libertarians would say, yeah, there's going to be problems in the world where these substances exist, just like guns. Where these things exist, people are going to misuse them, but it is not other people's right to force people not to use them. And my colleague Jacob Sullum actually wrote an interesting book called Saying Yes about the drug issue, in which he very controversially points out that most illegal drugs, most people who use them, don't become, you know, completely strung-out addicts who ruin their lives. That most of these drugs, most people are able to use them in a way that it's just an accoutrement in their life, like alcohol is to most of us. I'm not sure if that's the case with methamphetamine, making them illegal makes it a problem for everyone, something that would just be a problem for the person dumb enough to abuse a drug.
We'll continue. 340, the Pete Wilson Program on KGO. The book is Radicals for Capitalism. Brian Daugherty, the guest. 344, the Pete Wilson Program on KGO. Here's an email. This is the sort of thing I just love. Les in Mill Valley says, for Mr. Daugherty, since we have observed that socialism, communism, and democracy-fueled capitalism are proven failed systems, and that even the best of systems leave far too many behind with far too few opportunities available to the least of us, what do you envision as a possible new system beyond capitalism?
Well, I envision, of course, actual and complete capitalism. And built into that question is, it seems to me, an essential desire for us all to live in heaven. I mean, failed democracy-fueled capitalism has failed on what ground? It's absolutely the wealthiest society that human beings have ever known.
From top to bottom, quite frankly.
From top to bottom. Even the poorest of us today have options and abilities and resources available to them that even the richest didn't have 100 years ago, thanks to the technologies fueled by free markets.
Is this a concerted kind of, and I don't mean to call less necessarily ignorant, but a kind of militant ignorance in which you decide that this is the case, never mind that you have absolutely nothing to back up the argument?
Everyone always thinks that they're living in the worst times on Earth. I don't understand. It seems to please people to feel...
Yeah.
That the sky is falling around them. I don't know why it is, but by any objective standard, we're as rich as a culture as anyone has ever been, and there's no particular signs that that's going to stop. So.
Back on the Pete Wilson program on KJO with Brian Doherty from Reason Magazine, his new book, Radicals for Capitalism. Mark, with another of these directions, Brian, he says, where does Brian stand on things like asbestos, DDT, and so on? Had the government not stepped in and taken action, these profitable products might still be on the market.
DDT's banning, as far as I understand
it's costing
it,
is costing
a lot of lives because it's actually very useful in the control of mosquitoes that spread malaria. In a non-perfect world, sometimes products are going to harm people, and I don't think... You see, people have a failure of the imagination. If government does anything, they have a hard time imagining how it could ever happen without government. I like to point out the difference between grocery stores and schools. We've been fortunate not to have a local board of groceries and the chief of the grocery... The groceries are responsible for our groceries, yet every day we see there's an amazing array of products available to us. But schools, because government has taken it upon itself, or in this example, the curbing of harmful products, we can't imagine how this would happen without government there. But I believe it can and it would, and in many cases, government goes too far in banning products that they consider unsafe, like DDT.
Do you need government to do certain things, particularly in emergency? Do you need government, for instance, to deal with a bird flu epidemic?
Yeah, most libertarians believe you do. Most libertarians believe that government does have a purpose, that there are certain public goods that a market could not meet. Epidemics are a very good example of them, national disasters. Most libertarians believe that. There is that substantial anarchist strain that we mentioned earlier that believes that overall the world would be a better place without government at all. Both of those ideas are discussed in the book.
348 KGO. Just a few final minutes here with Brian Doherty. His book is Radicals for Capitalism. If nothing else, folks, the book is just replete with interesting characters. Some of it's quite funny and entertaining because it is the nature of a third party to be a lot of things to a lot of different and unusual people. Alfred joins us. He's in Oakland. Alfred, your question or comment for our guest.
Yes, thank you. I would just like to know if your guest also is in favor of legalizing crack, basically given the terrible impact it has not only on blacks, but that the crime spills over and affects whites. And what's the upside? So how can does he want to legalize it and
okay.
Why?
All right.
Yes, I do, because I believe people have the right to their own life and their own bodies. The very existence of crack is a product of the drug war, because people needed to find more compact ways, more bang for the buck to transport their illegal substance. And you will note that even in a world where crack is illegal, there's plenty of crack. So it's not like your war on drugs solution is actually even a solution.
In fact, that argument is always interesting, and I honestly don't have a smooth answer to it. And that is, you know, what happens if we legalize, say, a drug like crack? Does it or make it available, you know, through the local pharmacy? What then occurs? Do people exponentially increase the use of crack? You know, do we all become addicts, or does it remain essentially the same people with the same problems taking the stuff to get past those problems?
I think that the reality is going to be more the latter. I don't think we have any reason to believe that everyone out in America chomping at the bit to use crack, but oh, darn it, they're law-abiding citizens and it's illegal, so they're not going to. I don't think that's what's going on here.
Let's talk to Bill very quickly in San Jose. Bill, your question.
Yes, hi. Great show, Brian. Thanks. Great answers. I have some questions about some other programs, but I see more problems with it. Most Americans don't want to do away with it. They were solved by government for specific purposes, like Social Security, like the Department of Justice, like antitrust law, like the Securities and Exchange. It oversees companies and makes sure that you know that our stock trades go through well. Like medical research, most people want to see, you know, they're willing to pay their tax dollars so that we can together solve and create new remedies for drugs.
All right, Bill.
Drug companies won't. So could you just address some of these things? Because
sure. You've pointed out at one of libertarianism's biggest problems with making public headway. Lots of people want big government. They might only want the little bits and pieces of it, but altogether it becomes this enormous monster. A lot of people are glad that they don't have to take care of their parents because Social Security maybe will, and they ignore the fact that it's going to become a demographic disaster in the next 30 years. A lot of people think that they need government say to enforce antitrust, and they're not familiar with the body of economic research that feeds into libertarianism showing that the standard story about monopolies is historically untrue. That, in fact, the only monopolies we ever actually see are those that government actually props up, like cable monopolies and,
right,
and the old phone monopoly. There's an enormous body of economic research behind a lot of this that we're not going to settle in a quick radio interview.
I wonder, we're at the stage now where somebody ought to do a history of the moving and running disaster called the cable industry in this country and how much it's cost the individual user of television over the years because government insisted on regulating it, mm-hmm, and in fact regulating most of us into near bankruptcy just because we want to watch TV.
Yeah. And it also brings up that there's a morality behind libertarianism. You can get bogged down in arguing the practical pros and cons of,
sure,
every single government action, but you just fall back on the principle behind libertarianism, which is it's not the best idea to solve a social problem at the point of a gun, which is what government really ultimately is.
Right.
So let's, to the best of our ability, figure out ways to have a peaceful society that doesn't require government with guns making things happen or not happen.
All the information on this very interesting book from Brian Doherty on my program summaries on the KGO website. Of course, you can get this book through the KGO book line and at your local bookstores. Brian, thanks a whole lot.
It's been great to be here. Thanks.
Brian Doherty. The book is Radicals for Capitalism.